Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared create collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
So my next interview is with two filmmakers, Nova Ami and Velcro Ripper, and we talk about their new film, Metamorphosis, produced by the National Film Board of Canada. This is a film that you're going to want to see on a big screen if you can. It's opening very soon in Toronto, and we're going to be getting out the podcast as soon as we possibly can. It's going across the country. You're going to be hearing, I hope, the interview in early June of 2018. And if you haven't, and you're way beyond June 2018 as you listen to this, it's still a relevant interview to be sure. We talk about the environment. I think I might have just was on the edge of coining a new word there. We talk about missed opportunities and climate change and symbiosis and relationships and creativity and grief and wonder. And this film is really, as some have called it already, a poem for the planet. It's a beautiful film. It's compelling. It's absolutely stunning cinematography. It's disturbing on a lot of levels, but on a whole other level, it's ultimately very encouraging, delightfully hopeful, and it's about change. It's about something called psychic numbing. It's about meditation. It's about being present. It's about somebody who's a psychohistorian. It's about choices and responsibility. It's about this notion that comes up, that somebody coins a phrase, futurelessness. I mean, how interesting is that? It's about submersive art. Wait till you see what that's all about. You're going to need to see the film to really understand that, but you'll certainly get out. You'll get a little bit out of what submersive art is in the conversation. Velcro believes that behind every cynic is a broken heart. I mean, if that's not a lesson for all of us to dig a little deeper into, I don't know what is. It's about choices and a sense of wise, as they say in the conversation, wise and radical hope. So stay tuned for a really interesting and beautiful film coming up. A conversation about a beautiful film called Metamorphosis. Don't forget davidpecklive.com for more information about my writing, my speaking, and face2facelive.ca for a long list of other interviews on a whole lot of issues. And I'm sure you're going to find some things there interesting to dig into a little bit deeper. And if you want to support the work I'm doing at Face to Face, you can do that on a monthly basis. We do have a few supporters already, not too many, but a couple. You can do that through Patreon.com. Thanks for tuning in, and coming right up, Nova Ami and Velcro Ripper talking about their new film, Metamorphosis.
Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by two very special guests here with us today, Nova Ami and Velcro Ripper, here to talk about their new film, Metamorphosis, National Film Board of Canada production. And we are so glad you guys have the time to join us today. Thanks for your time.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, great to be here.
So many things to say, so many questions right out of the gate. I would love to hear a little bit about the history and of how this film sort of started for you guys. And I think it has something to do with very, very family based, back to a weather event back in 2013. So I'd love to start there, but I have so many different questions for you about the, I don't know, just all the implications. And by the way, congratulations on a remarkable and beautiful, stunning, compelling film.
Oh, thank you. Thanks so much.
Yeah. So yeah, where does a film like this come from? I mean, it's such a beautiful piece. I think it's been referred to as a poem. Is it a poem to the universe? Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, we
described
it as a poem
for the planet.
Yeah, and it's quite epic endeavor. And it really the conversations about metamorphosis really started happening about just over 4 years ago now. In 2013, there was Typhoon Haiyan in the Philippines, and over 6,000 people were killed in that typhoon. And I had spent a lot of time in the Philippines. It was a place very close to my heart because I'm Filipino. And you know, we started talking about how an event like that could change a person. And, you know, that led to deeper conversations about humanity and how we're changing in a time of climate crisis, how we deal with that change, how we resist it, and how we adapt. So that really got the ball rolling in terms of our thinking about the theme of metamorphosis. And that was about 4 years ago now.
So is, I mean, obviously this is a film about the environment, but it's about so much more than that. And it comes out in a variety of different ways. It's metaphorical and it's philosophical. I think somebody, you know, one of the people that you talk to in the film talks about these, you know, these deep existential questions that this you know, all-inclusive event, as somebody else says in the film, refers to. So could you talk a little bit about that, those layers?
Sure. Those two people you're referring to are Nikki Silvestri, the CEO of Soil and Shadow, and Robert J. Lifton, who is a psychohistorian or a psychiatrist who looks at history through the lens of psychology and psychiatry. And they kind of are like the big thinkers that sort of are woven through the film, and I think really were important for us as the key voices of the film, in that they explore the themes of change. Lifton talks about the myth of Proteus, and Proteus is the sea god who was resistant to change, but finally was coerced into it, and then took on many different shapes. And just like humanity is both changing the planet and then being forced to change by the changes that are kind of coming upon us.
And then with Nikki Silvestri, she talks about grief and grieving the loss of things and really acknowledging our grief and allowing ourselves to fully feel it in order to move through it and feel the awe and beauty and the love for what we've lost. And so that those themes are sort of running through the film in terms of how we deal with change and how we deal with what we've lost and how to get through the crisis phase and move into a phase where we can envision something beautiful.
I love it. And I don't know who it was, but it might have been Lipton who said that this is like a rescue process for the self.
That is Lipton. The protean self. Lipton wrote a book called The Protean Self, and he believes that humans are innately changeable, innately adaptable, and that we are actually made to be changeable. We're evolutionary beings, and we're constantly changing. And I think it's when we really try to resist change that we run into trouble. We run into fundamentalism, which is about a fixity on a mythical past that never really was, actually, and a kind of idea of unchangeable perfection, whereas the reality is this is an impermanent world we're in. Nature is impermanent. Life is impermanent. And how do we accept that and then work with that change to envision a metamorphosis that is positive.
Mm. Yeah. And, you know, when we were conceiving of the film, we came up with a string of phases that we would go through to create the arc for the film. And so we started with chrysalis, the chrysalis phase.
Right. Which is beginnings, and that's the sanctuary you go into where the transformation happens.
Yeah, and then we move into the crisis phase.
Which is the wake-up call.
And then we go into catharsis.
Which is the processing of the crisis and the releasing of that crisis as well, moving forward.
And then we move forward into symbiosis, which is mutually enhancing relationships.
Between ourselves and the planet, and also between humanity itself.
Yeah.
Do you think, you know, you talked about that grief, and that's clearly a thread throughout the whole film. Do you think that we, as a planet, as communities, as families, as individuals, have to suffer or at least face that grief before we can get to that positive space? And I guess that's in a sense what you're saying by these different moments in the film. But you take a very hopeful stance, and which is wonderful and marvelous, and I love that. But is there a sense in which maybe many of us are not willing to face that? Does that make sense?
Definitely. I think we have a tendency to want to spiritually bypass difficulties in our lives.
Right.
And when we do that, they don't go away. You know, Lipton talks about psychic numbing, which is a tendency just to shut down and pretend it's not happening. That's what climate denial is a form of. It's a form of psychic numbing, potentially because we just can't face it. We can't deal with the overwhelm. So we really need to fully feel in order to be able to move through.
And again, it might have been him as well. This idea of change reminding us of our immortality. I think there's something really interesting there as well about this. You know, and again, this idea of coping with change is this. Again, I mean, my background academically is in philosophy, so for me, existential questions. You know, what is the self? Who are we? When are we? How are we? How are we best ourselves? When are we best ourselves? It seems to me we're best ourselves when we're with others. And I love the way human beings, the way you've situated others in the film, really conscious choice, it seems to me. What exactly were you trying to tell us by very, very much focusing on the face and the voice? We don't know their names till the end of the film. It's really, really interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we set about from the very beginning to record our interviews with audio only, and then we have images of our subjects in the film, but we don't actually see them talking to us. And our intention with that is we really wanted the film to be like a poem, like a meditation, and for us to really focus also on the imagery. So that was an intentional choice. And it also, I think it helped with our subjects in terms of feeling more at ease with their stories. And, you know, it really freed them up to express themselves in a way that having a camera face, you know, right in front of them doesn't. Yeah. It was really to offer something kind of like a meditation in that sense of having us hear the voices of the characters or the subjects but not see them talking to us.
It was actually a fairly radical decision as documentary filmmakers to decide not to film talking heads. There was no going back because we only had audio interviews, you know,
right.
And oftentimes people kind of consider the talking heads kind of the A role, and then they call everything else B role. You know, and I never did. I never have liked that term. This is just everything else is B-roll. I find it insulting to the cinematic aspects of documentaries. But it's kind of like you string together the talking heads, and then you try to find a way to cover it up. Mm-hmm. In our case, that wasn't an option. We had portrait shots of people, and the rest had to be cinematically expressed.
Yeah, you know, we really wanted to create something that was a cinematic experience for people to come into the movie theater and see something that they wouldn't be able to experience on a small screen in the same way. And, you know, there is a broadcast version that we have that has identifiers for each of the subjects on the bottom because that's more conducive to that format. But for the feature-length version, we really set out to create something that was a cinematic experience.
Yeah, we really hope people seize the opportunity to see it when it's on the big screen, because that doesn't happen for long, really. You know, you blink and you miss the theatrical release.
Right. Well, it seems to me this is the type of film that people are going to be watching for years to come. I mean, it's the kind of film that you go back to. It really does play. I mean, I think you guys have succeeded absolutely beautifully from a poetic perspective. It's just sound, Velcro. Can you talk to me a little bit about the poetry of sound in your film?
Sure. Well, sound design is always close to my heart, and as a craftsperson, I work on other films as a sound designer. I did The Corporation and a place called Chiapas and a number of other films. I love the power of sound. And we have a great collaborator we work with, Daniel Pellerin, who's a sound mixer, and Nova's worked with him in her previous projects, and I have throughout my career. And so we have a really great composer as well.
Mm-hmm. James Mark Stewart.
And his music is very much a sound design, and he uses a lot of backward sounds, and we kind of take that and weave it together and really try to take it to another level. And again, in 5.1, that sound is surrounding you and moving around, and it's quite powerful. I love the butterfly wings, for example, are a combination of male breath and female breath, and a volcano rumble and actual wing flaps and a few rocket taking sound effects taking off, all layered up to create these sort of beautiful wing flaps of the high speed slow motion monarch butterfly shots that we have.
Yeah, and you know, the use of the breath sounds really ties into our intention with offering a meditation, because that's something that, you know, we focus on in meditation is our breath. So to incorporate those sounds in that way, I thought was really quite beautiful.
The shots of the butterflies, you know, while you guys were just chatting, are absolutely remarkable. And I mean, I'd love to hear a little bit about it. I think my listeners too would as well. I mean, for me, you know, living in Southern Ontario, it's actually pretty rare to see a monarch. Right? I mean, it just, you don't see a lot of them. And yet you've got these stunning images of kind of the whole life cycle of the monarch, and the monarch is the metaphor to some degree. I mean, can you tell us a little bit about that? I mean, as far as that, was that a really intentional decision going in, or did that kind of bubble to the surface as you guys continued to shoot?
Well, we came up with the theme, the title of Metamorphosis actually came right off the bat. And so naturally, we explored the idea of the threat of the monarch butterfly because the species is under threat. And so it really evolved into the species that we focused on, and tying the theme of the different phases that I discussed about in terms of our arc of the film and chrysalis. And you know, the whole transformation aspect of it. We definitely intended to have that metaphor tie in to what we're going through as a species with what the butterfly goes through in its lifespan. Michael Reynolds, who's the architect for the Earthships, which is one of the stories that we follow in the film, he says that, you know, right now we're like caterpillars. We're eating everything in sight.
That's right.
But we have the potential to become beautiful winged creatures, you know. So the metaphor is really quite strong throughout the film. And you know, we really had an amazing opportunity to spend time with the butterflies as well, because we went to the Monarch Sanctuary in Mexico. And I have to say, David, that was one of the most incredible experiences
I bet.
I've ever had in my life. You know, it was really quite spectacular. And, you know, I've seen monarch butterflies here and there, as you said, but to be surrounded by millions of butterflies, and where they stay, they rest, they sleep, they wake up in the morning, and it was really quite a miracle to witness, and that I would really experience the awe and appreciation for the monarch butterfly.
Well, it's It's interesting, you know, your comment earlier about this sense of wonder and our loss of wonder and how it's tied to the grieving process and so on. And I, you know, for me, you know, as a philosopher, all philosophy, pretty much everyone, you know, you go back through the history of philosophy, will, and my listeners will know this, I've said it before, but, you know, all philosophy begins in wonder. It's about the question, right? It's about the desire for something else, I guess, and something other. And I can imagine what it must, I mean, truly wonderful to be immersed in something like that. And isn't that really, you know, somebody else in the film talks about this being, you know, the difficulty in being present. And I don't know about you guys, but for me, you know, as a dad and a husband and a friend and busy all the time, it's hard to be present, you know. And they talk, that's the person in the film talked about this deep longing for presence. And I wonder to what degree that's connected to those moments, you know, that you were just talking about, you know, with the monarchs and so on.
Yeah, that's Nikki Silvestri again, who says that, you know, for her, being present is so key, because when we're present, we actually can't harm in the way that we're harming right now. It's almost that psychic numbing or that denial that allows us to do the kind of harm. But when we really are present, then we become present to the wonder of life, the wonder of the planet, the wonder of relationship. And that's definitely a key thread running through the film. And in our experience, you know, I remember, Nova, you were talking about we actually had a conceive of our son about the same time we conceived of the film, and we brought our baby with us in the making of this whole movie.
Nice. All
of and one of the things that Nova said is that having him with us really caused us to have to be totally present, you know, in the moment. It really...
Yeah, you can't be, you know, thinking about something else. I mean, it really forces you to be right here, right now. And you know, one of the things, you know, when we were making the film too, having our baby with us, it consistently raised these questions for us as to, you know, what was our role here as parents and as filmmakers? You know, how do we protect our son from what's happening, but how do we prepare him as well? And, you know, what future are we raising him?
Well, it almost strikes me as a love letter to your kids, or to all children, frankly. You know, it's to all of us, I suppose. But I so love the scene with the kids. I guess they're not in kindergarten, but they're planting the milkweed, and a favorite line in the film, I think I'm 6 and a half, but I'm 6. Yeah. it's just so wonderful. Isn't that what it's really all about on some level? But yeah, this sense of legacy and what's next? This is about, you know, adaptation, but it's also about making some choices today that are going to impact the future.
Yeah, we're in a critical phase in human history right now, and the decisions we make now are going to affect future generations for hundreds and literally hundreds of years to come. So there's a huge responsibility, and I think the film really brings in those big questions around futurelessness and how do we cope with it? The sense it's beyond death, beyond, as Lipton says, it's beyond human death, is this idea that there may not be future generations if we don't figure this out. So what a huge responsibility.
I loved the sequence, and what a remarkable artist, the guy making the underwater statues, these what did he call them, living and breathing coral reefs. Mm-hmm. How do you find somebody like that? I mean, first of all, and then what a project to undertake. Can you tell us a little bit about his history? I mean, again, it's just such a beautiful metaphor, but it seems like on a certain level, there'd be very few people, you know, if you hadn't filmed some of that would be, would be seeing that. Got to throw your scuba gear on to go down and check out the art exhibit, you know?
True. That's true. That's the work of Jason DeCare Taylor. And he's done some incredible work where he casts statues of people in his community and then submerges them underwater, where they transform into coral reefs and become ecosystems for...
I just love... Well, how do you even come up with that idea? You know, I mean, it's beautiful. Yeah.
Yeah, it's really quite incredible and spectacular. And, you know, we had the opportunity to go into his studio and see him casting as well. And it's quite a process that he undertakes to go through that.
But yeah, you see the kid in the film getting cast. Initially, we were going to do it. And then we watched this little kid, and he's like covered in this plaster and then, you know, having a mold made of him. And it's like,
yeah, I don't think we're going to do that.
Yeah, it was great. I'm so glad you kept that line in. So what was this? Something about, yeah, that's, I'm not doing that again. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, it's stunning work. And they go through this metamorphosis, you know, I mean, every scene in the film is exploring some form of metamorphosis. Mm-hmm. And this one, it's these human sculptures that are put under the water to explore themes like sea level rise, and that then in turn metamorphosize into living, breathing coral reefs.
What do you say, and I want to get to some of the, I mean, it's such a beautiful and hopeful film as well, and yet seems to, it doesn't seem to start out. It starts out pretty bleak, pretty grim, and yet there's still a sense of hope, I think. And I think it has to do with the your establishing shots and the stunning photography and the visuals and so on. But how, and before we get into kind of the solutions, and I want to talk about this repurposing our environment and 300,000, is it 300,000 pools in Los Angeles? Is that how many?
Yeah.
Anyway, how do you not go, you know, when thinking about this and when not being overwhelmed by the problem, you know, you talk about it in the film, somebody talks about it as being this all inclusive event, you know, we're all in this together, but yet so many of us continue to ignore it by the choices we're making and by the cars that we're driving and the pools that we're filling up and so on. How do you stay away from that, I don't know, that deeply cynical space and wind up in a more thoughtful, hopeful, and responsible space, I suppose?
Yeah, I once heard someone say that behind every cynic is a broken heart.
I think it's
very true. And I think our hearts are getting broken in many ways by this kind of ruthless society that is so, consumer bent and shallow in so many ways. But the magnitude of the crisis, I guess, is the hope in itself, in that it's like it's getting harder and harder to ignore when people's entire, that whole town got washed away by flash floods in the States. And, you know, we're seeing that, you know, well, forest fire season is getting out of control and the droughts are coming. You know, it's not something happening far away anymore.
Right.
As we're starting to make the film, it's clear it's not in the future. It's happening. Climate change is happening right here, right now. And as it becomes more undeniable, one hope that I have is that it will be a wake-up call and we will wake up, because humanity has tremendous creativity and tremendous ingenuity, and we have created this mess, but if we apply ourselves to it, we can get ourselves out of this mess. And I think we are seeing, as we started making the film, we started seeing so many people working towards solutions, working for ways out. And when you really start tuning into it, you see hopeful stories almost every day. California just last week passed a bill that all new houses will have to have solar panels on their roofs by 2020. That's just a couple of years from now. I mean, we're seeing some rapid change happening on the positive side, and that's really what has to happen.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I had someone come up to me after one of our screenings and say, you know, a lot of the films that I've seen about climate change get stuck in the crisis phase.
Right.
It doesn't move beyond that. And that was really something that was important to us, was, of course, we have to draw attention to what's going on, but we have to look at what we can do, and, you know, what are some ideas, what are some inspirations that we can look to move through this? Because, you know, we have a choice here. We can give up, or we can choose to have some hope and do something, right? So we don't really know what's going to happen in the future, but if we don't do anything, then, you know, we won't have known. Like, we talk about this, as though, you know, we have people that we've had in our family who've been diagnosed with cancer. And, you know, when you get a diagnosis like that, you can choose to give up, or you can choose to try everything you can. And because you really don't know what's going to happen. There are people who survive and there are people who don't. But you know, it's a choice that you make in terms of how you're going to deal with it. And
it's a wise hope that we're talking about. You know, we're not talking about, again, the spiritual bypass or the happy, paint happy faces on everything and pretend it's all good. In fact, no, it's not all good. It's
right.
Really not all good. But we can choose a wise hope, a kind of a radical hope. And in terms of the I just can't do it all myself, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh is one of my teachers.
Miracle of mindfulness.
Uh-huh. And he says we don't have to do it all. Because of the law of interbeing and interconnectedness, just choose what you can do and do it well and do it truly. And you're part of everything and everything else that's being done. No one person has to do it all, but we can all do something.
Yeah. And you know, the solution suggestions or ideas that we highlight in the film, they're not meant to be the answer.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. They're launching points. They're catalysts for other types of change and adaptation.
They're design principles that can be applied.
That's great.
Projects, different ideas, and they're more like suggestions. Like this is something that this person is doing, and these are the elements. Like for example, the Earth ships, right, which are buildings that don't require fossil fuels. They have solar energy. They reuse the water several times. They grow food. So
they don't require heating or cooling because of their design.
Yeah. So, you know, ideas like that, that can be applied, to other projects, are things that we wanted to, you know, put out there.
So I'm so glad that you included, the phrase vagabond skateboarders in the film. I might have been one of those at one time many years ago, and have a couple of broken bones to still, when I play pool to this day, my left elbow hurts from a fracture skateboarding when I was about 18. Talk to me a little bit about this, and sadly we're going to have to wrap it up soon, but tell me a little bit more about this repurposing of our environment, this you know, the you talk about the changing of how the global economy is going to have to change, and you've kind of already, Nova, talked a little bit about that, but I love these garden pools. I mean, it's just, what a great metaphor for so many things, and clearly an incredibly practical approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the excerpts are read out from a book called Aerotopia, and it, the author is
Tyler Stallings.
Tyler Stallings in the film. And he starts by talking about what are the things you could do with a swimming pool other than fill it with water that just, you know, is a huge waste, something like 7,000 gallons a year evaporates.
Yeah, that was an astounding statistic to me. I've not heard that before. Remarkable.
And so his first example is kind of playful. It says, you know, in the event of a drought, which happened in California, all these pools were drained, and then vagabond skateboarders invented pool skateboarding. So we actually got a bunch of these skateboarders together. The skateboarders went swooping past us, and then he goes on to another example called garden pool, and that's where these pools, these abandoned swimming pools or pools that people choose to drain, are transformed into self-sustaining ecosystems. A kind of dome is put over top of them. The deep end of the pool is made into a fish pond that grows fish, and then and a water catchment system that captures water, and then a dense ecosystem of edible plants that create enough food through this whole system, including chickens woven in there, that can feed both the family that lives there and their entire neighborhood. They're remarkable, invention, and an example of repurposing what's already there, and instead of always building something new.
So you kind of end the film with the faces, with the people, which I think is beautiful and wonderful. But I think just before we get to that, we talk about the systemic nature of all of this. And again, I think this is really connected to being hopeful. And this is what I so love about your film and your take on change. And again, it doesn't Lipton say that our human capacity for change, what does he say? It's underestimated. The question you ask at the end of the film, or somebody does, is the human experiment going to make it? Or how do you guys stay so hopeful? I mean, you clearly probably met quite a few people along the way that you know, the naysayers, you know, it's in the press almost every day. I have friends who are climate change deniers, you know. How do you get out of bed still smiling every morning?
We have a child, that's one way, you know.
Like, yeah, that's right.
He inspires us every day.
Yeah, and it's also the path we choose, you know. We find ways to, really be present and focus on what we want as opposed to what we don't want, and what we're for as opposed to what we're against, and really steer our energy in positive ways that are moving forward. That's, you know, something that I think is really important to us in terms of going with that positive movement and pushing our energy that way.
I think that, you know, being artists and creating art that's part of the change, being part of the change, being the change, is hopeful, keeps us energized, knowing that we're doing something. We're choosing our something we're passionate about. So we love to do, we love making films, we love doing this work, and we're also putting it into service. And I think when you can combine those two things, something you're passionate about and service together, you're going to find a source of meaning and you're going to find a source of hope. And that's going to get you out of bed in the morning.
Mm-hmm. We have a mission.
Yeah, having a mission.
Having a mission, yeah. Listen, thank you to you both. We've been talking with Nova Ami and Velcro Ripper about their new film, Metamorphosis. What a beautiful and brilliant and just timely piece. Thank you so much for your time today, guys.
Wonderful talking to you, Dave.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Want to join a film club that has real, frank discussions, talking about films that you actually want to watch?
Well, then look no further, because we are Frank Film Club with me, Maisie Williams. And each week we watch a film and then come together and obsess over it, or sometimes absolutely slate it. Either way, there's always a lot to say. And the films that we pick range all the way from like 90s and noughties classics all the way up to new releases that are coming out every single week. And sometimes we get our listeners to pick for us.
And we all work in the film industry, don't we, ladies?
Indeed.
So we really love to look at specifically how a film was made.
So if this sounds like your bag, then come and have a listen to Frank Film Club. And remember, absolutely everyone is welcome in this club.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.